One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore in World of Warcraft and maybe other games, but probably not anytime soon. I am Anne Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers from Blizzard Watch, and I've got two fabulous co-hosts with me this week again. First off, we've got an incredibly bald Matthew Rossi.
Yep, it's true. I had to shave my head.
You look amazing.
Thank you.
And then we also have with us our other second co-host who regularly give us the details on Shaman and lore as well, as it turns out, Joe Perez. Hey, Joe.
Hi.
How you doing?
I am still in shock that Rossi is bald.
Are you bald?
I am not.
Okay.
No.
I still have way too much hair, so.
My head is way too misshapen to go bald.
No.
It's actually funny because when I was a kid, I actually fractured my skull, and my wife just finally saw the fracture mark.
Wow.
Dent. She's like, what is this thing on the side of your head? I'm like, oh, yeah, that's when I broke my skull when I was 12. So, yeah, it's still there.
Hey, skull fracture buddies.
Yeah, it's weird because I have kind of a bullet-shaped head. It's very aggressive looking. So people, I'm walking around and people are like, oh God, he looks like a mob enforcer. Like, no. Look, I will pick up and snuggle this kitty. I'm fine, really.
It's okay. I'm nice. I swear. Okay. So this week, obviously, we're going to talk about lore, World of Warcraft. The big thing that we have to make mention of is hello between the last show and this show, really. We had an expansion announcement come out. So World of Warcraft, Legion.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. I'm totally going to say, if you didn't listen to the previous episode, you really should, and then go back and see exactly how much, in particular, Mr. Rossi predicted.
Yeah.
Well, let's be fair here. This is the expansion where they did almost everything I could possibly want them to do. So it's like, oh, it's bound to get a few right.
There you go. Yeah, they kind of, they appear to be, from the announcement anyway, they're kind of throwing everything in there, aren't they?
Everything in the kitchen sink.
Everything in the kitchen sink and Alaria and Duralion besides. But first, I think we should probably start off with talking about Gul'dan, because obviously he's kind of the catalyst for all of this stuff.
It's interesting, the little movie they showed.
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking
about the cinematic clip?
The little cinematic clip, which I don't know if we're going to see that. So
for those who are listening for the first time, by the way, we are not going to shy away from spoilers at all in this podcast. If you want to hear about lore, you're going to hear about all of it, including the stuff that hasn't been out yet. So fair warning, we're going to talk about this stuff. So yeah, let's go ahead and talk about the cinematic. Sorry.
It starts off like, you know, in the dark, and we don't really know where Gul'dan is. We find out later, they tell you, but for the clip itself, it just shows Gul'dan wandering around a dark place, and then he
lurking in the dark.
Yeah. What's funny is how incredibly, like, frustrated he looked. Like, they did a really good job of animating his face, because he definitely looked like, I cannot believe, after all the stuff I did, I'm stuck schlepping around in the middle of the dark.
Oh my god! I'm stuck in a tomb. Mm, yeah.
Actually, it's really funny how it played into the Warcraft 3 feeling.
Mm-hmm.
If you've played through Warcraft 3 and you've read like the Tomb of Sargeras scenes, in particular, where you get the flashbacks to what happened to Gul'dan, it was it really mirrored that. It kind of reminded me of the cinematic at the beginning of Warlords, like how it harkened back to a previous period. But then he finds like the big crystal doohickey, and I gotta say, I just don't get Night Elf funeral customs, because when someone dies in my family or whatever, we don't stick them in a giant crystal and keep them forever.
Well, that was
you're
so
not Maya of Shadow Song.
Yeah,
either.
I was gonna say Maya did that just because she was like, you know, really angry and was like, you know what, screw this, you don't get a decent burial. This
Wait
crystal looks awesome.
So the Huntress is nothing without the Hunt, and I'm nothing without you. Fine, I will take your corpse with me wherever I go.
Yeah,
if it works for D&D parties, it works for Maeve Shadow.
There you go.
I mean, I'm just saying.
There you go.
So we get, you know, we get Gul'dan doing his magic evil bit, and then we see Illidan's tattoos light up. Apparently, he's going to be a part of this expansion. We don't know how yet what his role will be, but Illidan's back. So
I'm curious if he's going to look at Gul'dan as a nemesis, as a ally, or as a tasty future snack.
I gotta say, you gotta think that this is not somebody he would trust. And
no,
of all the people in existence, he knows exactly how, you know.
Well, you know, that's the interesting thing too, though.
This guy ate my skull. I think I'll go wake him up.
Well, that's exactly it too. This is really interesting because if you remember back in Burning Crusade, he had the skull. He was talking with that damn skull.
Oh, yeah. No, he was doing that whole, alas, poor Yorick, I knew him well, up at the top of Black Temple. But the thing about Illidan is, like, okay, obviously they need him to fuel this portal thing that's letting the Burning Legion through to Azeroth. Okay, I get that. Understand that.
Well, we don't know that.
We kind of got hints at that is what we got. What I don't get is, why would it have to be him? Like, why him? And also, I don't know if he's going. If anyone on Azeroth knows Gul'dan and knows how to beat Gul'dan, it would be the entity that consumed the powers of his skull and talked to him for a very long time after his death.
In Warcraft 3, Illidan straight up has Gul'dan's memories.
Oh yeah, he chit chat. That's how he knew how to go to the Broken Isles to get the Eye of Sargeras to go ahead and like try and assault Northrend back in Warcraft 3. So, I mean, obviously, Illidan knows Gul'dan exceptionally well. And whether or not that holds after Illidan has technically died and then come back again, which, again, we're hailing back to that whole Twisting Nether thing that we mentioned on the first show, where so you like kill a demon and he's not really dead.
Well, and that's the interesting thing, right? So maybe it's not about Illidan as an entity that exists. Maybe it's because inside of his body are the missing piece of Gul'dan before he was basically raised to demonhood. Because if he has memories that technically never existed for the other Gul'dan that has been pulled into the Twisting Nether, that's a missing piece of the puzzle.
I don't know. I honestly think we might be overthinking that whole thing.
Do you think Gul'dan wanted to wake him up so that he could in turn kill Illidan and consume his skull? And therefore get Illidan's memories and his own back again?
More or less. Or like he was just basically told to say, hey, go there. He's got pieces of your brain. Go get it.
I think we're probably going a little bit too far down the rabbit hole with that.
I don't know. All I know for certain is that we're going to see Illidan again. We're going to have this enormous demon invasion. We've been told there's the biggest demonic invasion of Azeroth ever, which makes the War of the Ancients look like, oh, hey, that was a nice spring day. Now we've got demons. This is demons.
I'm excited about that prospect because we haven't had like that whole sort of full out. I think the first time we had any of that kind of full out world invasion was back when the Gates of Ankh-Morage opened in vanilla.
Yeah, and even
which
that
I really enjoyed. Yeah. It was bugs everywhere. Everywhere there was bugs.
They did that. They did the Scourge invasion twice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They actually did that when Naxx came out, and then they did it again when Wrath was launched. So I don't know. My thought is this kind of like they've sort of made it sound like we're going to have this big event before the expansion actually launches.
Well, yeah, that's what they said flat out.
Yeah,
this is before it's like a pre-expansion thing.
Well, the siege of the Tomb of Sargeras is going to be a thing because that's how we get our artifact weapons.
But they said that this invasion and all of this other stuff, this all takes place prior to the expansion's launch, which I find very entertaining.
Because
hello, content!
Yeah, I want to see what happens when that when we do that. Like, what are the stakes? Honestly, there's been a lot of talk about it because of the artifact weapon stuff Joe mentioned. We know at least two of the artifacts are weapons that you wouldn't expect the people who have them to just let them go.
Ashbringer and Doomhammer. Although, I don't know, Tyrion Fordring seem to be pretty good at, like, misplacing Ashbringer.
Yeah, I do remember that quest in Original Wrath.
Maybe he just dropped it somewhere, and you find it in the closet. Oh, Ashbringer dust that thing off. This will work.
I left it with my hockey gear.
They pretty much hinted that it's not... It's some of the stuff, you know, their wielders are either, like, depressed or gone, and I don't know which we're gonna see or what. I mean, there's some stuff I want to see.
The Doomhammer in particular strikes me as interesting because Thrall's not the sort to just like hand that over,
but he is the sort that maybe gets written out that says, you know what, it's somebody else's fight now, I got a family to raise. Peace.
Well, there's honestly the idea that, you know, we keep talking about it. The idea is that he might have given up the fight. That's, you know, they use that language, I believe, if I'm not insane.
Yep.
I believe Anne made a point. You were talking, I don't know if you wrote it yet or not, so if you didn't write this yet, you may have just said it on Twitter and then didn't actually write it. But you were talking about the Doomhammer and the prophecy and something?
Yeah, I was talking about the prophecy, and I'm actually looking that up right now because I was like, I need to find the exact wording of that thing. Where is it? Ah, through blood, no, wait. Yes. Is that it? I think that's it. Through blood, the weapon shall pass as surely as night begets day, until the elements cry unheard and pride turns to unbridled rage. The last of the line shall deliver salvation and doom upon his kind. Honor will be undone and all will be lost before it is found again. A stranger will raise the hammer high and with it justice shall reign. So we assume that the entirety of this is about Orgrim losing the Doomhammer and then Thrall regaining it, leading the Horde to victory, all this other stuff. But what if that last sentence, that bit about the stranger raising the hammer high, if that's not Thrall? That's Prophet, you.
Prophet Velen straight up says at one point that it's going to change hands again after Thrall. Like, he straight up says it.
When is that?
Way back in Burning Crusade. Like, it's when they first started talking about...
Was it in Burning Crusade?
Yeah, it was when they started talking about the prophecies. When Velen basically, I forgot what quest it was. Oh God, it was a long time ago. But it's one of those things where it's just like he mentions it offhandedly, where it's like, and it will change again, and it will be once again used to cause in the case of justice or in the cause of justice.
Yeah, but
it's really kind of nifty that, you know, it's Prophet Velen who says it's going to go somewhere else again.
It will go somewhere else, and yeah, I'm kind of like.
Well, here's the weird thing about the whole Doomhammer prophecy is that we assumed Thrall was the stranger, but Thrall wasn't a stranger.
Right.
He was essentially Orgrim's best friend.
Well, he was kind of a stranger to his own people because he wasn't raised with them.
Yeah, but...
That's how I always looked at that.
If you think about it this way, Orgrim's best friend died, and Orgrim was effectively, therefore, standing in lieu of Durotan. He was the only thing Thrall had left. And clearly, by the time Doomhammer dies, Thrall is his heir.
Pretty much.
Now, they're not blood-related, but how important is that to orcs?
Like I said, I had assumed that a stranger meant Thrall because Thrall wasn't raised with orcs. He was raised with humans. And when he first showed up to talk to Grom, when he found Grom, like, in the woods after he had escaped...
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was that moment where they were like, who are you? You speak the human language. This is really weird. And they thought he was a stranger. And he kind of had to learn the orc way of doing things from the ground up. You know, after he had already reached maturity, he kind of had to learn all of this stuff. So I figured he was the stranger. But it, maybe he's not.
It's certainly feasible. I don't necessarily know that that's the theory, and it isn't my theory, but it's an interesting idea to consider. That's why I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah.
In terms of whether or not Thrall is still going to be alive, I don't know. I think it's unlikely they would kill him.
Like, I don't think they'd kill him.
No.
Extremely unlikely they would kill him. People have been asking about whether or not Varian's going to die, just because they've been giving
Anduin,
well, they've been giving Anduin a lot of press, and Varian's not listed on the page. But then again,
and a brand new model. Don't forget that too.
Then again, Vol'jin isn't listed on the page either. It's not like they've listed Bane or, you know, Gen got listed because Gen seems to be they seem to have set Gen up as Sylvanas's opposite,
which makes interesting sense. And yeah, it does make sense to a degree.
Well, I mean, he definitely would want to go after her because she killed his son. I think Sylvanas, in doing that, the whole Gilnean invasion, I think Sylvanas has finally made an enemy that has a personal stake in killing her. Like all of her, like the previous,
and it's like the worst one she could make too, because he's a crabby old dude with the chip on his shoulder, and he will let that chip just fester.
Oh yeah,
Again, Greymane. Come on.
This is the guy that locked his entire people up for 20 years just because his friend annoyed him on a budget issue. I don't want to spend money on that. I'm gone,
and so is everybody else. We're going home. And we're not coming out. And you're not coming in.
Honestly, I would love it if Legion brought us some resolution to the Gen Sylvanas conflict and some resolution to the fate of Gilneas.
I want to know where... oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the name right now. Crowley. I want to know where Crowley went.
Yeah,
where did he... father and daughter.
They went behind... They went back into Gilneas.
They did. At the end of the... Well, it's a starting experience in Silverpine. If you're Alliance and you've played through the Gilneas starting zone, you haven't quite seen the end of that. And you should roll a Forsaken just for the sake of playing up to the end of Silverpine. So you can see what happens there. Because Crowley does make an appearance, both father and daughter. And then they just kind of disappear. And they're never heard from again, really. Nobody really knows where they are.
Well, that's because nobody knows what's going on in Gilneas. The story for Gilneas doesn't move past that point. There's a battleground.
It does a little bit. Because if you do the rogue legendary chain in Cataclysm, you get a little bit more of that progression. There's a black dragon disguised as a human, and he's sort of rounding everybody up and, you know, riling them up, and you have to go in and kill him for Rathian, because Rathian... Anyway, but once you do that, it's sort of assumed that everybody there said, oh, wow, that enigmatic leader that weirdly had us under some kind of strange ensorcelment is gone. We should just take off. This place really sucks. And then it just sat there, and Gilneas is just kind of sitting there, and that's it.
The last time we saw the 7th Legion was the Gilneas as well. We don't know what's up with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll bring that up later because I want to talk about something lore-related, but that's not for right now. Okay. So we've got Gul'dan running around loose on Azeroth. We know he's going to be a raid boss at some point.
He kind of has to be.
Well, they've said straight up.
Yeah.
Yeah, they said you will be raid. You will fight him in this place.
And you will have nowhere else to run.
Yeah. I actually am a little... I don't want them to kill Gul'dan off because Warcraft kind of has what I call a Joker problem.
Yeah.
In that, you know, they kill off a lot of guys and then they basically have to either bring them back or... you know, do without them. Like, this entire... I feel a little weird about Warlords, because sometimes I feel like Warlords only existed to give us back Gul'dan so he could do this. You know what I mean?
That is entirely possible that will be the entire point of this entire expansion.
I actually have a tinfoil hat that I need to write regarding that. And I think I will work on that this week, because it's an interesting tinfoil hat.
It is, narratively speaking, it feels like, you know, Gul'dan's, you know, we got Warlord, so Gul'dan would be alive, so Gul'dan could mess with us some more. And then it's like, don't kill him.
And all of the people on Draenor are just going to stay put.
Yeah, they're not going to come through, even though...
It's like, hi, we saved your world. Can you come, you know, do us a solid? No, we're busy. We're busy fixing ours. Okay, but you don't understand. It's like, see, we got, like... there's demons out here, and we could really use you. And
like, you exist because of us. Like,
you're still alive because we kind of so can you just, you know? No, nope,
I get why they don't want to use them. It makes me a little upset because I don't want characters like Yarel to just go away.
I know.
I want Grom to go away.
They introduced her. They made her this really, really cool character and everything, and then all of a sudden she's gone.
Yeah.
She's gone.
I'd like to see Yarel again. I'd like to see
Marad died, And she got stronger because she witnessed that, and it kind of like bolstered her strength or whatever. And by the way, I hate one character dying to bolster another character. I think it's kind of contrived, but oh well. Mm. Moving on. She had all of this stuff happen to her, and now she's just going to stay on Draenor. Okay.
Yeah, it is.
What was the point?
Honestly, it does feel really bizarre, and it's not one of my favorite things, but I'm interested in seeing what they do with Gul'dan in this expansion, like what his role for the Legion is. I'm interested in seeing like what the Legion is doing, because they're not just after the event, whatever it's going to be. There's clearly a period of time where the Legion is just coming through. Like, they don't just swarm the world, that they keep coming through, but it's like they're standing around waiting for something. I want to know what that is. There's the Pillars of Creation we're told we're looking for.
I'm so excited about that. That also ties into the tinfoil hat thing that I'm working on.
Doesn't that remind you of the thing in Deepholm?
A bit, yeah.
That was holding Deepholm up?
Yeah, the world pillar.
Yeah. I find myself wondering if the Pillars of Creation are essentially that for Azeroth.
It's like the second step.
Yeah, there's something interesting going on with that. We've got, like, new zones. What gets me is, like, the Broken Isles weren't this big.
Nope.
But there's...
I know they weren't this big, and I know Gul'dan supposedly raised them from the sea or whatever, particularly Suramar. I mean, Suramar is supposed to have this 10,000-year-old civilization on it. Well, how were they living in a bubble under the sea? SpongeBob SquarePants? Like, what was going on there? Exactly.
Or were they actually... One of the things that comes to mind, for me at least, was... You remember when we started talking about the Timeless Isle? And how it might have been, like, an island that existed multiple timelines, whatever. It might keep
slipping. Blinks in and out of existence. Do you think Suramar does the same thing?
No, I think that they might have used their magic to basically put the Broken Isles in an out pocket. So, like, when it went underwater... It didn't go underwater. Like it went sideways. And the land went underwater, but the people and the cities and everything kind of went into the Twisting Nether, if that makes sense.
So are talking about Highborn here, and they were like some of the most powerful spellcasters in existence. I don't know. Joe, what do you think?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting theory. I mean, because we don't know what happened to them, right? And pushing themselves into the Twisting Nether makes a certain amount of sense. It also kind of makes me curious to go back to one of our discussions about Azshara, and maybe part of that is her doing too, with it coming back up, and maybe the Isles are less submerged as a result of that. Because let's not forget, she did kidnap Neptulon, she has been growing in power, and she's been unmolested for the entire time that we've been in Draenor. This could be part of that as well.
Like, should we talk about what we know about her? And
sure.
Because I believe they mentioned... Well, they mentioned that in one of the zones, and I forget the name, I think it says Sune, but I'm not sure. The Naga under her direction, he said, you know, he mentioned her name, he name-checked her. He said Queen Azshara, but he didn't say she's going to be in the expansion. He just said she's sending her forces in to find one of the Pillars of Creation, possibly working with the Legion. I believe they even said working with the Legion, didn't they?
I think they did.
But at any rate... Azshara is up to her, you know, old tricks, and it makes you wonder if she's responsible. If she is looking for the Pillars of Creation, I could see her lowering the water levels, because that is the kind of thing Naga love to do. They've done it twice now. They did it in Serpent Shrine, and then they did it again with Vashir.
What are they doing with all of that water? Why do they want to drain the water and keep it? Like, what are they doing with it?
That's a good question. I don't have an answer to it. The Naga have been back behind stuff for a long time now.
Yeah. And
yet to get like a, this is what they're actually doing out of any of it. So, and this expansion is once again going to keep us guessing. It's not going to give us a definitive on what the Naga are up to, but.
Well, maybe. We don't know. I mean, we could get more of that story. I mean, there's definitely potential there, especially as we start tearing through, because we already know that we're going to be facing one of her generals, essentially, another one of them, Tide Mistress Atisha, I think I'm pronouncing that. Right?
Yeah, Atisa or something. I can't.
Yeah, it's like Atisha or Atisha.
Atisa. Athissa. She's supposedly in Azshara.
So we're going to be seeing her, and I'm assuming that there's going to be something tied to her that's going to be explaining what's going on, or at least some plot, or at least I hope, knock on wood, that we're going to get something that's going to hint at what their end game is or their goal is.
Or what Azshara is up to. I'm kind of... all I'm just crossing my fingers at this point that they don't make Ashara some kind of weirdo zone boss or stick her in an instance. Because
she deserves more attention than that.
Oh, does she ever?
Yeah. I could actually handle her being in an instance if it's a situation similar to her last appearance in an instance.
Well of Eternity, where she escapes at the end?
Where she pieces out. She didn't even escape. She didn't escape because she wasn't in any danger.
She just casually strolled on out of there and said, okay.
I'm going to get on my giant evil bat.
And
y'all
we're just
going
to take off.
Yeah, y'all can keep doing what you're doing. It's cool. I don't care.
Bye-bye.
You know, so
see you later.
If she does that again, I'd be fine with it. Or if she made an appearance as a boss, I would want it to be a big freaking deal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're talking like kill Jaden Sunwell level appearance.
Yeah.
Complexity. You know,
I don't want
something huge. Yeah.
I don't want her to show up as the garage hell scream of a zone.
She could be like, she could be the main boss of her own expansion easily.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But that being said, though, I would like to find out. I would like to, for once and for all, actually hear something from her aside from, you know.
Hey, Malfurion, how's it going? Hope you didn't like Hyjal. See you later.
Paradoxically, I do like how civil she is when she shows up. I did like that she was very, like, you know, she wasn't, like, cackling and malevolent. She was just, hello, Malfurion. How have you been? How's the wife?
It was almost vaudevillian in that way. Like, it's just so, like, so civilized and proper.
Yeah, I like that about her. But, I mean, there's, geez, we could talk about Ashara all day, but there's, like, so much more to talk about.
We talked about her a lot last week.
Oh, yes.
Last time we convened.
So, let's somebody start talking about Demon Hunters, because my God, there's Lord, they're just right there. Someone talk about Demon Hunters.
So we get Demon Hunters.
Yes.
And Demon Hunters, it's interesting how they're treating this, because okay, way back in Warcraft 3, I think it was, there were Demon Hunter units, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And those guys were basically Night Elves who put their own eyes out, and they kind of made a pact to fight against the Burning Legion by assuming some of the Legion's powers. And it's kind of like what the Warlocks do a little bit. It's a very warlocky way of looking at things, only it's a Night Elf way of looking at things. And you'll notice that Night Elves can't be Warlocks.
Nope.
Demon Hunters, on the other hand, are Elf only. You can be a Demon Hunter on a Night Elf, or you can be a Demon Hunter on a Blood Elf. And these guys, the ones that are being presented in Legion, these guys are the remnants of the Illidari from Burning Crusade, which I find really cool.
Which I just went and visited right before the podcast, because I couldn't remember if there was a ton of them or...
Oh, there was a bunch up on the Black Temple.
There is an entire rise in the Runes of Kerebor that is nothing but...
Varadis and all his guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're just kind of hanging out up there.
That's like what I was really interested about, because they talked at the Gamescom about the... there's a secret mission. It feels really weird, because it feels like this entire thing will start like while people are raiding Black Temple. It feels like, you know, Gilladon sees that they're coming up, but he's busy sending his people off to this leather planet, so he can't really prepare for it. It's really messed up.
He's not prepared.
Ironically, yes, Illidan was not prepared.
But it was interesting, too, because the planet that they're going to was the prison world.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
Prison World of Mardoon or something.
Mardoon,
like
yeah.
The original world where Sargeras locked up all of the bad guys back when he was actually working for the Titans. And then once he decided, wait, no, Titans bad, evil good, he went back to this prison world and set them all free.
Which
By
makes you wonder.
Blowing the planet up.
Well, yeah. But it also makes you wonder, because, like, if demon hunters get their powers from either consuming or inviting demons into them, whatever case, what if something was left behind? And what was that, if that was the whole point of them being sent there in mass? Like, what if there was some big, great demon depository or something there that was like, hey, you know, this guy just happened to be too terrible to let out, but we can keep him here. And Illidan's like, no, I actually know he's there, so let's go get some stuff.
What I like about this is that if they play it a certain way, okay, don't get me wrong, I loved Burning Crusade. I thought Burning Crusade was fantastic. I had a wonderful time when I played Burning Crusade. However, Illidan and his story never really quite clicked with me, because he didn't have like a story arc. He just kind of lurked in the Black Temple. And you saw glimpses of him here and there. Like, you saw a glimpse of him talking to somebody about, like, the red crystals with the blood elves. And you saw a glimpse of him on Netherwing Ledge when he correctly pointed out that that was about it. You didn't really see what his plans were or anything. We were just told, hey, we need to go fight that guy and kill him. So we went and fought him and we killed him. But we never really quite understood where Illidan... Where he stood within the whole Burning Legion thing.
It was more obvious sense to kill Kale than it did Illidan.
Right. And it was obvious that Illidan still wasn't really truly allied with the Burning Legion, because obviously Kale Thas decided to go over Illidan's head and just talk to the Legion directly. Something that Illidan maybe wasn't willing to give him and wasn't particularly happy about when he did it. So what I'm interested in seeing here, because they've got a really good opportunity here to go back in a way and kind of round out his story. And depending on which direction they take, I may feel really bad for the warglaives that I have in my possession. And I may feel bad that we went to the top of this temple, because maybe he was working against the Legion all along and we just didn't see it.
Well, I mean, and that makes a certain amount of sense, too, if you think about it. Because, I mean, if he's tapped into Gul'dan's brain, right, if he's got all of his memories, he knows a bunch of stuff that we honestly can't even begin to fathom, right?
No.
We've never really been in that headspace.
Gul'dan, you know, way back in the original Warcraft games, Gul'dan was kind of linked with Sargeras, well, with Medivh, but Sargeras was in Medivh, and this game is so weird. Anyway... There was that whole mental link thing going on where Gul'dan was trying to pry the secrets from Sargeras' mind mere moments before Medivh lost his head. Literally. So Gul'dan does have an incredible amount of information on the Legion. Probably more than we ever knew.
And this opera, and like you said, this presents a great opportunity to fill in the gaps without retconning. I hate retconning so much.
That's the good part, because it's like, okay, he sent these guys on a mission. Why did he send them on a mission? Oh, he had a different plan all along. Oh my gosh, why did we kill him? You know, that kind of thing. Or it could be, wow, he was really messed in the head. I'm glad we took care of him. We should probably take care of him again. I mean, it could go either way.
It depends entirely on what he was going to, like, why is he sending them there?
What was he doing?
Are they about to breach the citadel of some, like, horrible monstrosity so diabolically evil that even Sargeras was like, nah, leave that in. That can stay in. That thing was a pain to get in there. I almost lost that fight. I don't want to let that thing out again.
And how awesome would that be if that was, like, maybe their ultimate goal, where it's like, you know what? He's probably still, or that thing is really pissed at Sargeras. We need to deal with Sargeras. Enemy of my enemy is my friend. Like, if it turns into this massive, complicated, you know, plot where he was planning and it was like a game of chess to Illidan, I am completely okay with that.
And the other thing that I'm thinking here, though, the other possibility is that he's sending them very deliberately to the world where the Burning Legion originated, to that world where it all began. And maybe he's doing that because he figures that's where he can figure out how to end it. If he sees how it began, he could somehow kind of discern how to bring it to an end.
Yeah.
You know, literally, we have no idea, but that's the
question. No, we don't, but I'm really excited to see.
No, the other thing about it, too, is that we then get to find out, at some point they come back or something happens, and Maiev locks them up in some evil vault. So we get to see more Maiev.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I hope we actually get to see more of Maiev than just the flashback. I hope she's actually in this game.
No, I want her to be a flashback. I don't want them to deal with her right now.
I want them to deal with her.
You know why I don't want them to deal with her right now?
I
don't want them to deal with her right now because I don't want to see the, she's gone cuckoo crazy Maiev of Wolfheart. I don't want to see that Maiev, and I don't want to see them try and handle that story arc when they're handling everything else in the kitchen sink that they've just thrown at us, because they will not do her story justice.
If they did, and I, you know what, I'm going to agree with Anne here, because if you've done the legendary ring quest, if you go up to that point and you see what happens to a warden when it starts tapping into
Cordana,
that close to the
Legion,
like, it just seems like that would be way too easy of a write-off, and I don't want that.
They already wrote off Fandral, and I was really ticked about how they handled Fandral. I don't want to see Maiev get that same kind of treatment, and I think she deserves way more than that.
That's all great, and I don't disagree with you necessarily, but the reason I want to see more of her is I don't think you can just drop her back into the game. I think you need to see more of her before you start working on her story. I think there needs to be. Plus, let's be honest, this is the Night Elf nightmare. This is the thing that they blew up their world to prevent having happened the last time. 10,000 years later, this is their nightmare. This is everything they don't want to have happen happening. You need to get the Night Elves involved. And we know Malfurion's off in Val's... I can't say the name of this. Valshara, thank you. We know Malfurion's over there fighting Xavius. I don't know what Taranda's doing. Like, I have no idea what Taranda's doing in this expansion.
Sitting at home, knitting, I don't know. They never seem to care what she's doing.
I hope to God that's not the case. But if with the leadership of the Night Elves divided and not being particularly important, this is the time for Maiev to get a little, for lack of a better word, I don't want to say redemption, because I don't think she thinks she's wrong.
And no, I think she's that not.
I think she would even say, look at what happens.
But she can slide into that level of importance.
I think she would... Honestly, I talked about this on Twitter, and I talked about this a little bit in Know Your Lore last Friday, when I was talking about Maiev. The thing about Maiev is that I don't think she's crazy. I think that she's actually got some really good points. Because, I mean, why did she want to keep Illidan locked up? Because he was the dude that went up to this pool on top of High Jol and said, hey, you know that crazy thing that drew the attention of the Legion that just murdered like half of our people? I think I want to make another one of those. And he just does it. And they don't kill him for that. They lock him up. So she watches him. She creates an order. Malfurion asks her to create an order to watch this guy, to oversee this guy, and it kind of extends to other criminals of Night Elf society. And then she goes off. She goes off to go take care of some sort of business. And while she's gone, Taranda shows up, kills her wardens, and lets Illidan go. Like, with no explanation to that. Just lets him go. So what does he do? He goes to Fellwood, promptly turns into a demon, turns around, kills more wardens. It's like they aren't even paying attention to any of this. And then when she comes back in Wolfheart, what is she seeing in Wolfheart? She's seeing, oh, Taranda and Malfurion have just sort of decided to, you know, brush their hands of that whole Highborn thing. Forget about the whole War of the Ancients and all of the stuff that nearly decimated our society from within, and just let the Highborn back into Calderae society, because why not?
No, I'm not saying – my point isn't that she's wrong in the first place, although I do think that her little murder scheme was a little
– it was a little over the top, okay?
A little murdery.
It was a little over the top and murdery, but at the same time, she has points.
Yeah, she
what
does.
What have the Alliance done for the Night Elves? What have they done for the Night Elves? They joined the Alliance after the end of the Third War, after Archimonde had been taken care of. What's happened to the Night Elves between then and now? Death. A lot of death. What happened in the 10,000 years before they joined the Alliance? Not a lot of death. Not a lot of anything.
Well, that's not really fair. There was the War of the Satyr. There was the War of the Shifting Sands. But
yeah, my point's not that
Maiev's wrong in the first place. My point is this is the expansion where she can begin to build a power base. This is the expansion where she can begin to say to the Night Elves, this is what happens. Look at what's happening.
Look at all of my wonderful points. Look at all the wonderful points I'm making here.
It's like, hey,
come to my side.
I predicted all of this stuff. Come to my mind.
I mean, look at it, you know. Look at what's happened. Look at this army of demons pouring through.
They're just making her points for her at this point. And
that would be what I'd want to see from Maiev. I don't want to see her show up and be a villain in his own.
Right.
I don't want to see her necessarily even have a big presence. But imagine
start building her up. Yeah, this is her okay.
Where she basically you're investigating what's going on in say Valcheron, and there's a group of Night Elves who won't talk to you. They won't deal with you. They avoid you. And you're like trying to track down why. And it turns out they work for Maiev.
You know what's interesting? What could be interesting? They could take her. This could be the first step to a Garrosh-style arc for Maiev, because Garrosh's story started back in Burning Crusade, and it just progressed. It progressed through all of these expansions, so why not take her down that same path? Maybe not make her a villain at the end? I don't know. I want to see Night Elf Civil War. I'm sorry.
Here's the thing is, honestly, I honestly feel like you have a three-way fight you could have in Night Elf Society. Because they can have extremists like Maiev.
Yeah.
Who come along and say, no. I know she's dead, but I don't care. I would absolutely bring Liara back. I would just say, she didn't quite die. She survived. And have, Liara and the Druids of the Flame and other ones basically back her and say, look, this is the way. Look how screwed up our society is. Our leaders are working with the Horde while they're firebombing our cities. This is Malfurion's got to go. The neutrality of the Cenarian Circle has to go. They can't be leading our society. They can be over there doing what they do and out of power. Then you have, obviously Tyrande Malfurion on the other side, because that's the status quo.
I would like to see this.
Well, you don't. The third faction would basically be in my heart would be Chandris. I want Chandris to come up and say, "You know what? None of you are right. I'm going to have to take over and be the pragmatic leader."
I want to see Tyrande actually sit down and talk to Maiev and go, "You know what? Maybe you have a point," and get into a fight with Malfurion over the whole thing. Why not? We haven't seen the two of them argue. They just kind of work together or whatever, even though, like you pointed out, rightfully pointed out, Malfurion's sitting here going, oh, yeah, let's go ahead and have the Horde assist us, even though they've been murdering our people and taking our resources and all of this other stuff for years. Why don't we go ahead and, just work with them? Peace, love, trees. No.
And the interesting thing is, all of this stuff could start popping back up, right? Because we have so many things that they're going to intersect with besides just the Burning Legion. We also have the Emerald Nightmare that's coming up, which is something that a lot of people have been asking for with Xavius making a return.
I'm nervous about the Emerald Nightmare.
As am I, but it's a really great point, especially for the Night Elves, where we can start seeing things like maybe Chandris starts coming into another role of importance. Maybe this is where she steps in and says, you know what? I got this. We're good. Or when Maeve steps up and says...
I do want to see Chandris step in, though, Rossi. You're absolutely right.
I am so tired. Absolutely. We've had Chandris Feathermoon in this game for 10, 11
years. She's been kind of shoved to the side.
Yeah, this is the most experienced general on the face of Azeroth. Mm-hmm. Who else has got... maybe Jared's about his experience, but he hasn't been doing anything for thousands of years.
Jared kind of deliberately withdrew from society because he didn't want that leadership role. Meanwhile, we have Chandris, who, she's been doing that whole thing in Feathermoon. What have we gotten out of Chandris? We got one short story, a leader short story, that was supposedly about Tyrande and Malfurion, but kind of boiled down to Chandris finally accepts Tyrande as her mommy.
Yeah, that's
what.
Just, yeah, which the Sisterhood of Elite
what?
Stuff. Oh, 10,000.
It's 10,000 years later. Get over your mommy issues.
I think that after 10,000 years of living, you wouldn't. I mean, it wasn't like there was a huge age gap between two immortal beings here or anything.
One of them
it was just ridiculous and stupid.
One of them is 10,000 in 70, and the other is 10,000 in 30. At this point, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't, I mean, they should be seeing each other as equals. It doesn't matter if it's a mother daughter.
Does Tyrande still pull that when Chandris comes to visit? Have you been cleaning your room? I'm 10,000 and 30 years old. Are you serious with this? But, honestly, I wouldn't even mind if they did the whole. They've been teasing it ever since when they did Wolfheart. They basically had Chandris and Jared basically go like, "Well, we're friends now. We'll be good friends." I don't care if they bring that back again, but for God's sakes, let Chandris do something.
Just give her a role.
She's been sitting in Feathermoon she's been sitting there for literally the entirety of this game's run, and they upgraded Feathermoon in Cataclysm, and I'm like, great, now she has an even more impressive place from which to do nothing. The Broken Isles are basically off the coast of Kalimdor, right?
We don't know exactly where they... From what I've been seeing from, preliminary maps and things like that, people seem to think they're off the... they're just off the northwestern coast of the Eastern Kingdoms, actually.
That's
closer to Lordaeron, which makes kind of makes sense because Gul'dan peaced out from the Horde when they hit Lordaeron. He peaced out and he went to go raise the Broken Isles. So it would make sense that he wouldn't have to travel all the way to Kalimdor to do this kind of thing. And of course, you know, when the Sundering happened, it just sort of blew everything into pieces. So who knows where the heck they ended up?
I don't know. I just ultimately, it just seems like the kind of thing that this is a very night elf history heavy thing. Like the War of the Ancients.
This whole expansion seems to be pretty night elf heavy, and I'm kind of happy about that.
This is the time to have Chandra step up and maybe, if nothing else, take a military leadership position where she's like, look, you two don't know how to fight a war, okay? No offense, Tyrande, you're great at going insane and killing a bunch of our own people on the off chance that Illidan will be useful. And Malfurion, you're extremely good at like letting the Horde do whatever it wants. But I'm actually a military leader, and I'm tired of being down in Feralas. So yeah, I'm taking over. I'm gonna lead this fight. And just let her. Just use her, Blizzard. You've had her for this entire time.
Well, just have her do something.
And what irritates me about it, too, is they had a whole thing with her, too, with Tides of War, where, like, she was there and then left right before the mana bomb went off. Like, they kept her alive for a reason. Use her.
Yeah, especially since they're having Sylvanas in this one, and they've teased that Illyria is coming back. And there's one archer on Azeroth who is better, objectively better, than either Windrunner sister.
Yep.
And that's
Chandra's.
Chandra's Feathermoon.
That's Chandra's, yeah.
You know, maybe, possibly, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, anybody else who would even be in the same league. With Vash out of the picture, there really isn't anybody. It's, like, the three Windrunners, and above them, Chandra's Feathermoon. In Warcraft 3, you could actually put Tyrande in there, because she used a bow.
Yeah.
She doesn't use a bow much in WoW, so...
No, she's much more about calling the moon and all that other stuff, which she's also phenomenally good at. So that's cool. That's
although
fine.
If you're a mage and you have I forgot what it is. There's a heroes. I can't remember the name of it. It summons like Echoes of Time. It does summon an old version of Tyrande who goes to town with a bow and arrow. Random little thing I noticed in Raid the other day.
I would love to see Chandra's and Tyrande ride into battle and just mess people up.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
And you know what? Malfurion can... I don't hate Malfurion.
Look, he's off doing his Emerald Nightmare thing, and that's good because that's what Malfurion is good at. That's what he should be focusing on.
He's messed up Xavius 3 times now. By all means, go fight Xavius. You're good at that. If they're bringing Xavius back, then by all means, go fight him. That's what
you're... Go take care of that guy. Go do the Emerald Dream thing. You're the dude with the experience in that kind of thing. And just leave the rest of this, the whole war thing. Yeah, leave that to us. I mean...
Well, that's the other thing, too, is because one of the problems I've always had with Night Elves, I understand why they made it so that, you know, you can be either gender as a druid or a warrior.
Right.
But Night Elf society is matrilineal.
Kind of, yeah.
It should... There should
and they've tried to shift it kind of out of that just for gameplay purposes because obviously, you know, if you want to play a druid and you want to play a lady druid, you want to be able to play a lady druid, period.
I don't have a problem with that. I just think occasionally there should be someone saying, you know, have the occasional NPC. They have orc NPCs be orcish about things, you know? Well, just have the occasional night elf be like, oh, right, your people have men do that. Okay, yeah, that's fine. Just something where there's like a little bit of that flavor is brought back. I honestly, when you first see the Night Elves back in Warcraft 3, you get to see them because they scared the piss out of Grom Hellscream.
Yep.
They scared him enough that he was willing to drink out of a fountain that had evil magic in it just because it might give him the odds. You know what I'm saying? They were nuts.
And Grom Hellscream was not a timid orc. Yeah. stretch of the imagination here.
He says straight up, like, they were savage maniacs in battle. They were fearsome and terrifying. I want those Night Elves back. I want the Night Elves back who, when you fight them, you know you've been in a fight.
I really want the Tyrande back I want the Warcraft 3 Tyrande back. I want her back. I don't know where she went, but I want her back. I liked her.
I will point out that she's a sociopath, and I've never actually liked her as a character.
Yeah.
She's a maniac, and I think she's a bad person. But she's interesting. She moves the story forward.
Yeah,
having that Tyrande around means you have somebody who, when Varian's like, it's a trap, would be like, I don't care, and leads in, like, you know, all her people to murder everybody.
Cool, then we'll trip it.
Yeah. She is nuts. Taranda is a Looney Tunes. And it's one of the reasons I'd like Chandris to step up and be more of a, let's play, all right, we want to have the mother-daughter relationship, then let's play with it. Chandris is the person who can tell Taranda, no. She's the one who can say, no, we're not going to go in like maniacs. I'm going to lead a charge. We're going to distract them. It would be nice if you'd use your powers to do that over there, where it's tactically, and you know what I mean? Have some interplay between these two characters and have them be a female-dominated society. Don't have to have it be like oppressive and bigoted. Just have the female characters in charge. Show them
acting. If they want to do that whole mother-daughter relationship, right? And I'm speaking as a daughter who had a mother, right? Okay, so there's several phases to this mother-daughter relationship. And when you start out, it's very much, you know, mommy and all this other stuff, much like what we saw, you know, in that short story. I think that's what irritated me the most about that short story, was that the relationship between Chandris and Taranda seemed very much like, oh, you're my little girl. And that's not where it should be. Not after all of this time, right?
Yeah, it's 10,000 years later.
There comes a point as a daughter where you reach a certain age and it's like, okay, you and your mom are kind of on the same page. And yeah, your mom might try to correct you. And yeah, your mom might try to like tell you what to do, but you can tell her, you feel safe enough and secure enough to tell her, look, mom, hi, adult here, I'm going to go ahead and go do this. I can take care of my own business. And the mom is secure enough to let you go and let you do that. And that's, it's much more like a friendship, a really close friendship than it is a mother-daughter parent thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, or you could even, if you don't want to have that, then have them be antagonistic. But by God's sake, they can't. So Chandris can't be a 5-year-old for the rest of her existence.
She can't be this coddled little thing. I'm sorry. Yeah. She's like, she's a murderer.
She's a high
she's
general.
Awesome.
She's the high general of the Night Elf forces. They wouldn't put her in charge if she had to go ask mommy every 5 minutes.
Yeah, you can't be that good at murder if you're, five.
We're kind of getting off topic a little bit here. Obviously,
oh yeah, we've got a ton more to talk about, and it's only like 9 minutes to go.
I know, right? That's okay. We're just kind of rambling. This is Freeform, so you know, people are getting what they aren't paying for, or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, so Legion, right?
Oh yeah.
We have a Legion coming through. We have a giant invasion. We obviously have something going on between Gul'dan and Illidan. We have Night Elf stuff going on. We did briefly mention the Emerald Nightmare does make an appearance. Yep. Let's talk a minute about Illyria and Tyrallion and what that might mean, their return.
Honestly, that's what when they announced Illyria and Tyrallion coming back, the first thing I thought of is that's where Illidan is sending his demon hunters.
You think?
Because it makes sense that when the planet got blown up, that they got caught by the Legion. And it would make sense that the Legion would banish them to someplace like Mardu. You?
For the people here who may not have like actually read the books or experienced these characters at all, will you explain why Illyria and Tyrallion are missing?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Okay.
And why people are concerned about this.
First off, real quick and dirty. Tyrallion is High General Tyrallion. He was the successor to Anduin Lothar. He's the guy that when Lothar went down, picked up the high, the great royal sword of Stormwind, and kicked the orcish butts. He beat Doomhammer.
He won the second war.
He's the guy who won the second war and defeated Doomhammer in hand to hand combat.
Right.
He is a paladin. I will point that out for all paladins out there. I am aware that one of my greatest Warcraft heroes is a paladin. Illyria is Illyria Windrunner.
Ooh.
She's the eldest sister of the Windrunner line. She's the Sylvanas, before Sylvanas got turned into a banshee, she wrote on the memorial to Illyria that Illyria was the best of them. She is possibly the most skilled Farstrider ever to exist. And she and Tyrallion had a kind of, for lack of a better word, a contentious but ultimately loving relationship where they had a child together. And during the Alliance expedition to Draenor, before it blew up, she and he sort of helped steal the skull of Gul'dan. It wasn't the skull of Gul'dan, was it? Yeah, it was the skull of Gul'dan.
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm.
They helped steal the skull of Gul'dan back from Deathwing. They helped seal the portals and ultimately create the magical feedback that blew up Draenor. They kept it from going to Azeroth and blowing that up too.
Portals popping up all over the planet, tearing it apart.
So at the end of that, they vanish. No one knows what happened to them. They were around for a while. They jumped
through a portal and peaced out.
Yeah. They were around long enough that people knew of them. Like when you talk to Denath Trollbane, he's like, yeah, I don't know where they went after everything settled.
And their son has been left behind. He's a half-elf.
Yeah, Arathor the Redeemer, who's... Yep.
Which is important, actually, too.
Yeah. And
I just had a thought when we were talking about Tirelian coming back.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember speaking to Arathor the Redeemer and him telling you about his little dream?
Yeah, I do.
The time.
Yeah. So for those of you that don't know, when you talk to him, he talks about a dream in which he's standing over a man when the skies are red and an army of demons stands before them. Well, what do we have coming to Azeroth right now? An army full of demons. Perfect timing.
We know that they vanished. We know that we've been seeing loading screens in WoW for years saying no one knows what happened to Ilaria or Tirelian. And we know based on the announcement this week that they're coming back in Legion. So I think it's possible that they will be involved in the Demon Hunter start. Like, it's possible that's where they've been. I don't know that that's actually the case, and they might show up in some other way. That's certainly possible. I do know this much, though. The return of Ilaria and Tirelian to Azeroth will have a seismic effect. It will... it's going to shake up the Alliance big time, because this is somebody on the level of Lothar. This is one of the greatest heroes the Alliance has ever seen. And if he's back, he's going to look at the world he left, the world he sacrificed a lot for, and I'm not sure he's going to like it. Like, there's a lot going on both in the Alliance and outside of it that he wouldn't approve of. So that's going to have a big effect. Ilaria, on the other hand, when Ilaria shows up, the Blood Elves are in for a huge problem.
Shocker, yeah.
Yeah, this is her. This is possibly one of the greatest high elf heroes ever to live.
The one who isn't a zombie.
Yeah, the one who isn't a zombie and who isn't like sitting around, mourning her dead husband and not sure what to do with her life. Plus, she's the one that saved Silvermoon in the Second War.
Yeah.
You can't. There's no way to impeach her. It's not like Valeria where they can say, well, she married a human. Yes, Ilaria married a human, but she saved Silvermoon. You can't take it away from her. If she strides into Silvermoon and says, what is going on here? What can Lorthamar say to her?
It's going to be interesting seeing the dynamic between her and Lorthamar.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's really...
Yeah. Can Lorthamar honestly try and push her out of the city? Can he tell her she's not welcome to Silvermoon?
Well, and who would do that? Like, when she shows up, who's going to support him in that decision?
Well, that's the problem. What happens to Blood Elf society if, like the last of the
she's
great
technically
elf
not a Blood Elf either. She's a high elf.
She's a high elf.
If she shows up in town, what do you do? Do you push her out? Can you push her out? Who do you get to enforce that? Do you ask the Farstriders to push her out? She was never the Farstrider leader. She was never their commander. She was simply the best of them. It's sort of weird. It'd be like if Captain America showed up in America right now after we'd all become addicted to, like, demon magic or something. It's kind of like, Captain America's like, what are you all doing? And it's like,
We look up from the souls we're greedily devouring. Wow, you've been gone a while.
Yeah. It's sort of...
Things have happened.
The thing is, it's just like, does this signal like the return of high elves? Like, will there be high elves in another expansion because of this? What does it mean? What happens in Undercity? Sylvanas went nuts trying to bring one of her sisters in. And that was Valeria, the young one. This is her elder sister. This is her elder sister who hates orcs like fire. She doesn't just dislike orcs. This is a person where Tirelian had to be, honey, do you think you've murdered enough orcs yet?
Had Sylvanas actually had Ilaria to approach during war crimes instead of Varisa, Garrosh Hellscream would be dead and Warlords never would have happened.
Yeah.
And Ilaria wouldn't feel a single second of remorse for it.
Nope. Ilaria would have walked in and killed him in front of the Celestials. She wouldn't even have, like, there wouldn't have been any stealth to this. She would have killed him while he was on the seat. She would have done it with her bare hands.
She would have just strangled him, because, it's that's her. She's tough. Tough as nails.
You don't want me to bring my bow in? That's fine. You can hold my bow. Oh, my knives? Here are my mini knives. My sword? Yes, absolutely. Hold my sword. Oh, you also want the hidden sword? Yeah, that's fine. I'll just... Excuse me a second. Okay, what were we talking
about? I'm just going to break his neck.
Yeah. Oh, the dead orc? Do you have any idea how many orcs I've killed? What's one more?
So
this one's brown.
We are approaching the 1 hour mark here, obviously, so we need to start wrapping it up. Quick, real quick, go. Rossi, biggest lore thing you're looking forward to in Legion?
Oh man, I want to see Suramar. I want to see this night elf, this like new night elf society, this new elven people.
Okay.
I'm really interested in that.
All right. Joe, same question.
Honestly, it's going to sound really goofy, but I'm looking forward to artifact weapons because I really, really want to know what besides a Doomhammer they're going to call upon for Shaman, because I can't think of another iconic Shaman weapon, and I need to know. Like, it's eating me alive.
Okay. As for me, I'm pretty much Night Elf everything here. I'm just excited that we're doing Night Elf things instead of Orc things, because that's interesting to me, and it's something that we haven't explored in forever.
That was Hazacostas's best line of that entire thing, when he was like, I know you all miss all the the orc stuff, the spikes, and everyone was like, no!
No, please, we're done with orcs for a while. Let's just put them to the side here. Let's concentrate on the Galdorite, because they kind of need it. So anyway, that pretty much wraps us up for this episode of Lore Watch. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. And your continued support means that this podcast, the one we're recording right now, as well as our other ones, and the website, and the community, is able to thrive and grow. And Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcasts. And if you're listening to this immediately after we record, hey, thanks for your support. And you also get a better chance of having your question answered on our podcast or in the queue, and an ads-free site experience. We didn't really have any questions this time around, so if you do have questions for Lore Watch, please feel free to leave them on Patreon, and we will pick one at random and go ahead and discuss it. We won't spend the whole episode discussing it, but we will take a chunk of time out of the show and talk about it if you feel like it. Anyway, that's it for this episode, and we will be back again 2 weeks' time. Thank you, and we will see you then.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in...
opinions.
We do that in every episode, too.
We're professional, unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.